Hello, my name's Marian Cooper, and today I'm talking with Jess Clarkson for the Lincoln County Oral History Project. We're at my home in Stanford, and it is about 11 o'clock, and today is December 13th, 2016. Jess, would you tell us your whole name? Would you tell me your whole name?
Yeah, I'm Jess Clarkson, Jr.
And will you tell us when and where you were born?
I was born in Lincoln County, McKinney, Kentucky, in 1924.
What was the month and day?
October.
October?
October.
Okay. Who were your parents?
My dad's name was Jess Clarkson.
Jess.
And my mother's name was Tabitha Young.
Uh-huh. So Jess Clarkson Sr. was your dad. And you were married. Who did you marry?
Married to Gladys Greer.
Gladys Greer.
Mm-hmm.
And when were you married?
I was married in 46, October the 25th, 1946.
So that was the day after your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
married
good.
In Somerset.
Married in Somerset.
Somerset, Kentucky.
And who are your children?
Well, I have Joyce and Bobby and Marlon. Three children.
Three children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's wonderful. A few days ago was the anniversary, 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. How old were you then?
I was 16 and lived in Henry County at that time. I went to Henry County in 1940, and I remember mighty well I was riding a bicycle December 7th, 1941. The Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor.
And how did you hear it?
Well, I heard it on the radio. I was visiting some people.
I guess everybody was shocked.
Mm-hmm. They was all shocked. Most of the old people then, I was 16 years old, most of the old people were saying, oh, I'd fight them Japs in a minute.
Yeah, I'm sure. Everybody felt like fighting day, didn't they?
Yeah.
And you did go to the service. When did you go?
I went in July of 1943.
So I guess you turned 18 or got out of school or...
Yeah, I'd been a farmer all my life and just a little old poor boy, just come out of the Depression. And you want me to tell you that when I...
So, when did you go? You went to... Where did you go?
Oh, my introduction center was over... I first went to Louisville. We caught a bus here in Lincoln County. And then we went to Louisville. And then we went over to Camp Atterbury, I guess it was, Indiana,
mm-hmm.
where Fort Benjamin Harrison won. I believe it might have been Fort Benjamin Harrison, Indiana.
Did you train there?
No, that was introduction.
Oh, I see.
And then I went to Cape Croft, South Carolina, to take my basic training, which was 17 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Cape Croft, South Carolina, near Spartanburg.
And where did you go from there?
And then I went to Baltimore, Maryland, for George E. Meade, Maryland.
And more training up there? Or?
And then I trained again there. And then when I left there, I went to King Patrick's Henry, Virginia.
Well, you were all over, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
I guess everybody was.
Oh, yes. And then I got on a ship there and went to over in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it took 28 days after I was on the ship that King Patrick's Henry. Port News, Virginia. And I got on a ship, and it took 28 days. I remember passing the Rock of Gibraltar. And it had been long since I'd studied about the Rock of Gibraltar. So then I remember going through there. And I remember one day me and the boys were sitting there on the ship. Sun was shining. We had our shirts off and looking down into that pretty water. It was really pretty.
The Mediterranean.
The Mediterranean Sea. So that evening, about sunset, just before sunset, I seen four or five planes at the distance. And I said, boys, I said, it don't look good to me. I said, we got to be looking out for this, but they'll probably bomb us tonight or strafe us. So sure enough, they did. Right after dark, they came over in 14 German planes, and the Navy knocked down four of them and brought the pilots on board. And then we went on to Naples, Italy. Landed there, and then after we was there, of course the Germans would bomb every time they got a shipment of troops. The Germans would bomb, so they'd come down and bomb us. And then we left there, and we headed. Of course, I had trained in a heavy weapons company. And after we got to Naples, we stayed there for a while. And, of course, they had slit trenches there. We'd go in them slit trenches when they'd bomb and all that. And then when it come time to go up on the line, well, of course, being trained in the heavy weapons company, we had 81-millimeter mortars and 50-caliber machine guns, 30-caliber machine guns, or we was trained to be a scout or whatever. So they taken us down there, and they put me in the 3rd Division at Anzio Beachhead, and they was just fixing to make the push for Rome, Italy. So we fought on in all the way through Italy into Rome. So then we thought that the 3rd Division would be going home, and they said no. Said you go down to Naples, and then be assigned to the Navy, and you go take amphibious training on a train in sea. And that's what we did, but we guarded Rome, the 3rd Division. We guarded Rome, Italy. That's where Hitler and Mussolini had made they just left out of there near the end of the war. And for some reason, we had to guard it. And of course, there's other divisions there guarding, too. But we went down to Naples there. Well, out from Naples, we took that train, and then we'd go and train on the Tyrrhenian Sea. And land in the water and climb them ropes for, I guess, 50 feet. We'd get up to 50-mile hikes and all of that. Well, then it come time for me to... After that, well, it come time to... After it was that part was over, you know. You just cut that off a while if you want to.
Okay, where did you go from there?
Well, we was training on the Tyrrhenian Sea, And some of the boys seem to think back in the scripture that the Apostle Paul and shipwreck there, they said that this was pretty much the same place. And then we would go out back to Naples and on the ship, and we'd go down there and spend the night and a lot of times, and then we'd come back up there. And I should have said, we'd come back of a night a lot of times. We'd come back up there to this is a mountainous country, and it was pretty much the same area as where we'd go to land in southern France, and it required being tough, and so they'd walk us about 30 miles with packs and climb all them ropes. I believe I told you about that there. But anyhow, what I was going to tell you, the morning we landed, why, they loaded us on a ship, and just as far down in southern France as you could see the ships, the bigger ships couldn't get into the shore, you know, and they put us in these little Higgins boats, and there's about 25 of us in the Higgins boat. Well, of course, I'd been a machine gunner over in Italy group, and when I got over there, they made a scout out of me and another boy. And what I had to do was, I had a Bangalore torpedo about 6 or 7 feet long, and I had to, when we made the landing that morning, well, I had to blow up the barbed wire. Well, of course, when we went off in the Higgins boats, off of the ships, just as far as you could see down that coast, was other boys, kind of like I was, going in, blowing the barbed wire up, and a little sailor was manning the craft and taking us in. Well, it was, they'd bombed the beach, and it's just a storm cloud had raised overhead. And English was, they was firing shells over us about 50 or 75 at a whoop across out to the beach to soften it up. And when we got near the beach, I was the first in one out with that Bangalore torpedo, and I landed in water up to my belt. And then it blew the barbed wire up, and the boys went in. Well, of course, they was doing the same thing all the way down, just as far as you could see. There's another boy next to me down there somewhere, you know, doing the same thing, blowing the barbed wire up before the others could get through. So then it's a mountainous country, and we get up on that mountain, and I know some of the boys kept taking pop shots at the Germans. They was, pardon me, the Germans, they was trying to move out over the mountain there. And some of the boys kept taking pop shots at them. And I said, you better let them go, you know, and pretty soon they throw that ack-ack at us. And me and another boy, we run and got in the ditch and protected herself. And we fought on and have some pretty hard fights with them. And we got up about the middle of France. Well, I'd send out a patrol. And about every 30 minutes, while the patrol would return, and I'd give them a password. And me and another boy was sitting there that night. It was a beautiful place in France. White plank fences looked more like Lexington.
Really?
And we'd had been fighting the Germans, taking pop shots at them up on the hill. And my company had went down to in the town there and had left us up there in this kind of a summer resort, you know, to guard. And anyhow, when the patrol come back, me and this boy was sitting. I thought it was our patrol, but it turned out to be when I gave him the password, I got a burp gun. The Germans, they shot over my head and hit my buddy there in the arm. And they threw a potato masher grenade at me. And a piece hit me in the hand and a piece in the back. Of course, we crawled up in a rose bush there, and it's a summer resort place, you know, and a lot of the boys is in them houses and here and yonder. But anyhow, the Jeep come up, you know, and they got my buddy and took him to the hospital. And of course, I just had a flesh wound in the hand and a piece in the back, and so I fought on. And we got to the German border. Well, our company commander, he said the scouts out. And it was a pretty ridge, I remember, and there's woods on each side, and we was in a big woods down at the end of that field. It looked like about a 10-acre field, and there's a woods on the other end out there. So we had these walkie-talkies, and anyhow, we'd got out there, and we couldn't see any Germans. We got almost to the end of that field. The Germans opened up on me and my buddy. We were scouts. And directly then, the company, we had the company out right in behind us. And when we all got together there, well, then the company, then they started scattering. And there's about 7 or 8 of us left. And company commander said we're going to make a flank movement, and we got over there into a hole. And when we did, well, I just reached down to get a grenade. And the sergeant, he just patted me on the back. He said, "Don't throw that grenade." He said, "They're all around us. Said they've done got us." About 7 or 8 of us, and we come out of that hole. And then they just stripped us down, you know, to see if we had anything on us. I had a P-38 pistol and dropped it in the hole before I come out. It's a wonder he hadn't killed me. So then they marched us that in down in a kind of a hilly-like country, and we went down to that place where the officers and all that brass and was, you know, and they were having a big party in there, so they set us down on the floor.
Can I stop you for just a minute?
Yeah. At the German border.
Before you tell me about being taken to the prison camp, tell me again where you were captured.
Uh-huh.
Where?
I was captured at Belfort Gap, France, near the German border. And then, well, I told you about being down in the woods there, you know, where the little old shack was there, you know, where they were cutting up, set us down there, you know, they were having a big time of drinking and going on, and we just like a bunch of tramps are sitting there against the wall. But anyhow, they loaded us up then on a train, and then we went for a day or two on that train, and I know we got hungry and wanted water, and they said, "We don't drink water here, we just drink wine." So we was hungry, and they brought out some cans, big old brown cans, and looked like it hold a 1/2 gallon. And they'd cut them open, and it tasted like horse meat, but it's pretty good.
You were hungry.
I said, "Tasted like horse meat." I hadn't never thought it tasted horse meat, but I was hungry, and if it had been horse meat, which it was, I guess, it just tasted good. So then they taken us on, and we went to Frankfurt, Germany, and they left us there for a while. And I know they brought us down to a place that looked like a hanging gallery. I forget the name of the place was. I believe it was around, it might have been around Frankfurt, Germany. But anyhow, they had a place, there was a hill there, and they called it the old Siegfried Line in World War I. The soldiers used to talk about it. It was a place, kindly, part of it is under the mountain there, and they had shavings and stuff, and it looked pretty nice, you know, and they opened the door, and they put us in there. Well, I laid there that night and tried to sleep, and when I woke up, I felt something crawling on me. And it was body lice. And I'd caught lice in that place. So they taken us on. They finally worked till they got us about Munich, Germany. It was the third largest city in Germany. That's a big railroad center up next to the Alp Mountains. Well, it's about, they call it kilometers, about 8 miles of Munich was a place they call Moosburg. Well, those were the where we landed. And there's about 110,000 Allied prisoners. That's French, Poles, Czechs, Russians, Indians, Canadians, Americans, and you just name it. So it was cold there in that place in the winter of 44. And anyhow, we didn't have anything much to eat. We didn't have any fire. There was about, I guess, 60 of us in the barracks. And of course, they had it was a big outfit there for 110,000. We had all, like I say, different nationalities in there. And they'd give us about 3 potatoes to eat a day. And a lot of them was falling off, getting thin. I didn't get too thin, you know, but a lot of big guys, you know, you weighed 200 pounds or something, you fell off. But I'm bound to say I done pretty good. But anyhow, you just existed, you know, and they hauled them out of there dead, diphtheria broke out, and they'd haul them out of there, you know, young boys. And of course, I was young enough that I could have had diphtheria, you know, and I dreaded that. But they'd work us, they'd take us into Munich. About every other day, they'd take us into Munich to work. We'd get there, and then directly the siren would go off. And the Germans would, they just, what they would do, they'd stay right there to the last minute before they'd do anything, you know, much with us. And then finally they'd go in under a shelter, you know, that they had underground. We'd go under there and you could see where he'd been busted. But England's planes had bombed of a night, and then they'd drop them incendiary bombs. And they would land on them rail cars and burn them. But anyhow, it was rough. We stayed there for about 7.5 months.
What did you work on when they took you?
And they'd take us there, and they'd work us in the railroad yard there, lifting them old ties and stuff like that, and rails. And it'd be cold, 18, 20 below zero. And then we'd go back to the camp, you know, which was about 8 miles, and maybe they'd strafe, you know. We'd get strafed, you know, by our planes, maybe. And we're threatened with bombs and all that stuff, you know. And then they come in there. After we stayed there for a good while, right on the very last, they took 200 of us out, and they took us to a little old place in Germany. And they had a big sawmill there, and it's close to a river. And they'd saw that lumber had band saws, and they'd saw that lumber, and we'd have to stack it. Well, one day our planes come over, and the door was open on this plane, and I just thought, you know, the plane was pretty low, but I just thought I was that close to home, you know, when I seen that.
Yeah.
But anyhow.
Well, what river? Did they bring the wood down, the logs down the river?
And they had them in that big bandsaw. They just cut them, and we'd stack the lumber out, you know, and all that. But then we'd hear rumors about the war, you know, then just kind of rumors, and just hoping, you know, that something would happen, that we'd get out of there and get liberated. And they did, and I believe it was the 14th, seemed like it's the 14th Armored, anyhow, Armored Division come through there near the end of the war and liberated us. And then we was happy campers then. And then, you know, of course, we had to clean up, and we was only allowed to eat so much, you know, on account of our stomachs hadn't been used to eating much. And it is a tough ordeal.
I bet it was.
And then finally they flew us down on C-47s. They flew us down near the coast, and then we come on home. It was really a happy day to get back home.
Oh, I know it was. I know it was.
So that camp, I guess that's about it.
Yeah, that camp where you stayed, it was close to Munich.
Uh-huh. About 8 miles.
Did it have a name?
Stahlhof 7A Moosburg.
Okay.
They call it Stahlhof 7A at Moosburg.
Yeah.
110,000 Allied prisoners.
What was it like in camp?
Oh, in the camp?
Uh-huh.
Well, cigarettes became a medium of exchange, just like money.
Uh-huh.
If you had a cigarette butt, you could get a piece of bread. Would you believe that?
I guess it was a good trade.
Yeah, still on.
Yes.
And, of course, Christmas come along, and it was 18, 20 below zero, and then we got a Red Cross package, and they put about, I think, 4 people on it. And then we, of course, it wasn't very much to eat, you know, but it really helped out.
It did.
Beat the potatoes and the green bean soup that we'd been eating.
Yeah. What'd they send you in that package?
Well, I don't know, it's just stuff, you know, it's been so long, it's hard to tell. Just a little is more like hash or something, other, you know. And I remember they had some little old Chelsea cigarettes package, you know, they'd put in that package and stuff like that. Maybe a little cheese or something other, you know. Kind of like the service, the Red Cross was, had to be something that wasn't perishable, you know, it would make us worse than what we was.
Right.
And we divided up and tried to be thankful, you know. Being a Christian, they had 2 preachers in there, and we got together and we went in there and had a meeting. And I know when I come home, I got a letter from a boy in Africa. He'd made a missionary, one of the boys that was in my meeting there.
Well, that's
made
great.
A missionary.
Yeah.
And like I've told you all along, I couldn't have studied, but I was a Christian. And the Lord was with me, and old dad and mom, and the people in the little community at Kings Mountain, I was praying for me.
Yeah.
And I'm here today, and by the grace of God.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were able to have meetings in the prison camp.
Yeah.
How did you pass the time when you weren't working?
Well, we just go around, you know, just travel around, and it was pitiful in that camp. It's such a big camp, you know, go from one compound to the other, you know, and go over a visit to French or maybe the Indians and all of that, you know. And
so were you in different buildings, like the French Ground 1 and the...
Just them compounds, and then some compounds that have them together, you know, and then others that have them off, you know. And then the officers, well, they had them, you know, that... then the German boys, well, they'd come down with a plane sometime and want to show off, you know, what the Germany had.
Yeah.
And that's just faster than sound. You know, our planes now is faster than sound. You hear them go over, you know, and then you look and you can't see the plane. It's done gone.
Yeah.
One crashed over here at McKinney one time, you remember?
Yes.
We went over there, me and my wife, looked at that hole, that crater where it hit. But they would do that to German boys. That's before we'd got a hold of that, I think, at that time, you know, and then the United States went to building them planes.
That was the first time you'd ever heard of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
it was really something to see.
Yeah, I can't imagine what the prison camp would have been like. I guess that there was a lot of time to pass.
And yeah.
Did you play cards or just sit?
Oh, yeah, a lot of a lot of them would play cards, and I never was too much on, you know, a lot of them would do this and do that, but I was, you know, as a Christian, I always tried to, you know.
Yeah. Did you read, or you didn't have radio, I don't guess.
Oh, no. Uh-huh. No radio.
Did you have stuff to read, or?
No, you just talk amongst yourselves, you know, where you come from and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, just meet people.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's interesting.
But,
You made a lot of friends there.
Oh,
I guess.
Yeah, I made a lot of friends. A lot of friends.
Did you keep in contact with men that you met there?
I kept in contact with that one fellow, Emmett Dale Ashley. And then he had one boy, and they'd come to see me and my wife would go down there. And then I told you a while ago, you know, it had been 50 years, the anniversary of that.
Where was he from?
From Russell Springs.
From Russell Springs.
And so, he hauled milk down there. That's his, trade. Of course, I farmed.
So you all were close together after you came back.
Yeah, we were really close together.
Yeah, well, that's really something, isn't
and
it?
And then his wife passed away. Me and my wife went down, you know, to the funeral, and same with him. And we were taking him to the, you know, the anniversary and all. And
you made a lifelong friend in that prison camp.
Yeah, we did.
That's a wonderful thing.
And some
to come
of them
I
never
of
did see anymore. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Even that day that we went in the field, I was telling you about when I got hit in the hand and all that. Some of them you didn't see. And then in the field out there, you know, when we crossed the field and before we was captured, you know, the company, so many of them got killed and this and that and other, run back and all that.
And you get separated and I guess never see each other again.
Never see each other again. Uh-huh. But you meet a lot of people in that journey through there, you know.
Oh, I'm sure you did. How old were you when you got out?
Well, I'd have been around 21, I guess.
Uh-huh. A real young man.
Oh, yeah. Let's see, 18, 19, 20, 21, 21, something like that. Yeah. Well, let's see, yeah, I went in 43 at the age of 18, and then I came out in November of 45, the 5th of November of 45.
Uh-huh. Just hard to imagine how young.
Yeah. And, but we had a good life. I mean, we worked hard on the farm, and I bought the old family farm, and my mother, I told her before I married, there wasn't nobody but just me and my mother. Well, Dad, he passed away, but then, you know, and just me and my mother.
Uh-huh. So you were 21 when you got out?
Yeah, and I had a crop.
Uh-huh.
When I went, you know, just like I had a family, I had a crop.
Uh-huh.
I had corn and tobacco and stuff like that, you know.
The same thing we grow around here now.
Yeah. And then when I got out, when I came in for me and Glass married, I told my mother, I said, I had allotment. I said, Mom, I said, you use that money now. I said, just me and you. And I said, you don't know, I could get killed or whatever. You hope not, but could. But you use the money. But when I got out, my mother gave me the checkbook. How low she had, $1,400. Well, $1,400 back in 45 was a lot smarter money.
Yeah.
$1,400. Now $14,000 ain't nothing.
Yeah. Did you come, was the war over when you came back to the States?
It ended while I was in on furlough. Now, when I came back, they gave us, I think it was 60 or 90 days. They gave us a long furlough. We went down in Florida to a big motel. That's where we stayed, and we ate there at the oceanfront beach, you know, just the finest eating with
a beach you could enjoy, I guess.
Oh, yeah, we enjoyed that. and then went back. And then even though I had been through all of that, I was subject to go to Washington, maybe. Washington State, not see this Washington,
oh, Washington
over here,
State.
And then Washington State, that's from across the United States.
Yeah.
So we was watching the bulletin boards, just wondering if us troops, you know, if they'd send us out there. But we was lucky they didn't. And finally then we went out on the, got discharged on the point system, you know, points, so many points for if you was wounded, and you know, and you had the Purple Heart, or so many months you'd done this, or so many months that, of what you'd done. That's how they mustered us out. See, all these troops had to be mustered out to come home, you know, and whoever had the most points was either the longest overseas, or was wounded, or some guy might have his leg off, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Just a different thing.
So they were mustered out first?
Yeah. Yeah.
I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
When you came back, did you go to a camp when you came back? Like Camp Pendleton or something? Did you go, or were you just...
I went down to Fort Benning, Georgia.
To Fort Benning.
And then I was classified as an armor anticiper. And what we was doing, we had that Cosmoline on all kinds of these guns, unpacking them, taking that off, and then had a testing area. And Fort Benning, Georgia was a place where they tested guns and all that, and they used us a lot of times to test it while the officers, big officers, would observe the muzzle blast of a night on certain weapons and stuff like that. And then that was tested. And then in Fort George G. Maryland, where I'd been, was a proving grounds where they approve of that then. They put their approval on it over there, you know, if it's tested, if everything's just right, that Fort Benning. And I stayed at Fort Benning for a while doing that, you know. And just hoping, you know, waiting to go home, you know,
uh-huh.
when it waited muster us out. So then I came home, and then I run around there for, oh, I don't know, from the 5th of November till the next year of October the 26th. My birthday is on the 24th, and I got married the next day on the 25th.
Uh-huh.
Married my wife.
That was a real celebration then, wasn't it?
Then I was taken there, you know, we in the old little old house that I was raised in, and of course she come up like I did, poor too, you know. Her daddy was a blacksmith, big fella.
And you all had gone to school together.
We'd went to school together back during the Depression, back in the 30s, and when they was telling about the war, when Hitler was bombing the little countries over there, you know, and taking the railroad back, you know, getting a hold of the railroad and all, where you and building all this underground and doing that, you know.
Uh-huh.
We heard that, and we even heard when they had the flood in Louisville, the teachers were telling us about the flood when we were just little.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was a good student, you know, and she wanted to make all A's. And we was good in math, and they put us at the board, you know, when she's a little thing. I never forget seeing her. She had a habit, you know, just turn her shoes like that, you know, standing, and the teacher would get after her, you know. And she'd be figuring that up, that, you know, I can just see her, and she'd be erasing that chalk off the boards, you know, and then she'd put that down just as quick, you know. And we was both good in math.
Were you sweethearts before you left?
No, we wasn't.
Just friends. Yeah.
We was more bashful, we was.
Yeah.
And her daddy didn't want his, he had two girls.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and he didn't want them to marry. No.
He wanted to keep them.
And we ran off and got married.
Did you?
We didn't have to, no, nothing like that. He just didn't like his... But he knowed me, and he liked me, but he just still didn't want his girl to marry.
He didn't want to lose his girl.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the way it was.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess a lot of people don't.
But you know,
lose
when we
children.
Married, well, all the young people, my wife, she worked for Patterson Brothers. You go down there now, and you could look at Kings Mountain. You'd say, well, there never was anything there. You could look at my place. You'd say there never was anything there. The railroad company just let it grow up in logs. Been 55 years, I guess, or something like that.
And you're going to tell me about all that your next interview.
Oh yeah, first. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to hearing it.
But it was something. But what is going? Let me tell you this: when they thought a lot of us, you know, Glanston Jr. They called us, you know, there. And so the biggest store in Kings Mountain was Patterson's, and they'd come out of Casey County and everywhere in trade. They had everything for the home and farm on their counters. So she become their cook.
Oh.
Yeah, she'd cook for them. She was a real good cook, and she'd cooked ever since she was just little, she said. And she'd cook for them. And then when she'd get through cooking, well, she'd go down to the store, like Christmas or something, or different times, and then she would wait on the people down at the store. It was a big store. And they worked several hands, and they all liked her, you know, and they gave us a set of dishes, and and then they had chivalries back then that come, and all the young folks liked us, you know, the girls and the boys, and they came, and went and bought pop and candy and stuff and sat here in the yard, and we chickened out, you know, and we left. We didn't want to be rolled on a rail and all that stuff you hear about.
Yeah.
But we was well liked, and, you know, yeah. They liked us.
Where'd you run off to get married?
Went to Somerset.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get married, like, at the courthouse or the
church?
No,
I went to the courthouse, and we had a bond, marriage bond.
Uh-huh.
And then they gave us our lives. We went to the preacher there then, and then we had my cousin and a girl to stand up with us, you know.
Did you take them down with you?
Yeah, no, we met them down there, you know. Of course, I knew my cousin, but this girl hadn't seen her, but she stood up, too.
Uh-huh. So did you contact them when you got there, or did they know you were running off?
Well, I had an aunt down there, and my name was Carla Clarkson, and lived on High Street, and went and got her, you know, and went over to the courthouse, and then from there, then we got through the marriage bond by then. But we didn't know what to think about all that marriage bond, you know. We had to know your dad, your mom, and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But we had such a good time in life, and we worked hard, and the old place, you know, we built a new home, new buildings, barn, outbuildings, cellars. She canned and put that fruit in there. She, you know, big cans of everything, jars just sitting. And we'd kill her hog, had her own meat, her hogs, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Did you build your own buildings?
Yeah.
I knew you told me you
and
built
my son is a carpenter, Marlin, you know.
Uh-huh.
I need to show you his big horse barn he built on 78 going to McKinney. Have you seen it?
I don't know.
You gotta go down that way?
I go down that way sometimes.
On the left, you'll see a big horse barn up on the hill.
Uh-huh.
That's my son.
So did he learn his skill in carpentry from you?
Yeah. Well, he just picked it up there, you know. He just looked like gifted for it. He worked and built them big lawyer houses, doctor houses, million-dollar houses.
Yeah.
And he's got owns a lot now, you know, worth a whole lot.
That's good.
Yeah, boy, but his wife is dead. He married a nurse out of Corbin. And they were well-off people. From Corbin, and she's been dead now several years. We miss her. I mean, Angie.
I'm sure you do.
She was a nurse for 22 years and had that cancer, passed away.
Yeah.
Well, I've gone all rattling here.
Well,
and
I certainly appreciate you telling me about your experience.
Well,
in
what
the
happened
war.
To my daughter-in-law? She just left me?
No, she's going to come back. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, let's see now. You ended up on this story, the war story.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and turn it off now.
Yeah, just going to turn it off. Oh, you hadn't turned it off?